say goodbye, but it's time for me to fly.
I think it was the frustration that kept us going, because we knew we could do it. We weren't going to quit one record before the big one.
I'll be here when you are ready to roll with the changes.
We never knew what a security guard was for. We never needed a security guard before, but I remember, you know, staying in a hotel and there'd be like people literally trying to knock my door down just to, I don't know why, I guess just to shake my hand, or I don't know what they wanted to
do. They were trying to get out.
But don't let them go. You take it on the run, baby. If that's the way you want it, baby, then I don't want you around. I don't wanna stay. I just wanna keep on loving you.
Hello, this is Neil Dowdy
and Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon in the studio
for High Infidelity.
Legendary Major League Baseball manager Casey Stengel once uttered that famous quote, "Nice guys finish last." But with the release of their High Infidelity album, the members of REO Speedwagon refuted that notion. If REO Speedwagon was a baseball team, their statistics for the 1980-81 season would be as follows. 9. High Infidelity was REO Speedwagon's 9th studio album. 4. The number of times the band changed lead singers. 2. The number of times Kevin Cronin was hired to be REO's lead singer. 5. The number of charted singles that spun off of the High Infidelity album. 1. The peak of both the album and the single Keep On Loving You on the Billboard sales charts. 15. The number of weeks High Infidelity topped the sales chart. 1,981. That's the year, A.D., that REO Speedwagon had the year's top-selling album. And finally, 10 million, the number of High Infidelity albums that have been sold in America alone. In a lot of ways, REO Speedwagon was much like the Midwest region from which they sprang, at the University of Illinois at Champaign. Solid, unassuming, hard-charging musical journeyman, lead singer-songwriter Kevin Cronin remembers how he elbowed his way into the frontman spot of REO Speedwagon.
I got in the group just by accident, really. They were looking for a new singer, and I had a little, looking back on it, I would call it a scam, going in Chicago. We were looking for musicians to join the band that I had in Chicago, so we put an ad in the Chicago Sun-Times. What we did is we started a little thing called the Musicians Referral Service, because if you were looking for more than one musician, the Chicago Sun-Times wouldn't allow you to ask to put a want ad for two musicians in the same ad. It was just their policy. If you needed a bass player and a drummer, you had to pay $15 to put wanted bass player and then another $15 to put wanted drummer, right? What I did is I thought, all right, I'm gonna get what I want here for the price of one ad. And so my friend and I, who was our tour manager, right? We toured, you know, up and down the block, but... we started what we called the Musicians Referral Service. And we figured that way, a lot of people would call us and we could help other people get in other bands. And by the way, we'd get the cream of the crop of anybody looking for musicians for our own group. So we hung flyers all over Chicago. And it turned out that REO was playing in town. And Gary was down at the Chicago Guitar Gallery looking at guitars and saw one of our flyers. And unbeknownst to the rest of the guys in the group, called up this Musicians Referral Service looking for a lead singer. And of course, I was the Musicians Referral Service. And Gary told me that I'd get $200 a week and a car. He made it sound like I was going to, like when I joined the band, I was going to get my own car. He said they had a recording contract with CBS Records. He said, so who's your best singer? And I said, you're talking to him, buddy.
Waiting here for you to take and drink of.
roll with the changes, which is exactly what the band did when they made the leap from the University of Illinois Champaign campus to L.A., determined to compete national level. Here's REO Speedwagon keyboard player Neil Dowdy.
The scariest thing we ever did was move from Champaign, Illinois to Los Angeles, California, because we were pretty big time guys in Champaign, and we got to really thinking we were hot stuff. And then all of a sudden we moved to Los Angeles and we were just nobody. We were in a town where you're either a monumental success or you're a failure. There's nothing in between. That was quite a shock for a while. I think eventually it just made us work a lot harder, but it definitely made us grow up a little bit.
REO Speedwagon lead singer Kevin Cronin.
I have to think that somewhere in the back of their minds, the powers that were at the record companies had a feeling that there was something unpolished, but nevertheless, they must have just felt something, in as much as we were so popular in the Midwest and live audiences reacted to us so well, and that they must have heard something in the songwriting that made them think, well, these guys have got something there. They just have to work on it a little bit more. And luckily for us, even in the days before we had hit records, we had a real loyal following, and we continued to have a real loyal following. And these people have supported us, ever since the early 70s. And every record that we've ever made has sold at least 500,000 copies. Even back in the early days, they would sell at least 100 or 200,000 records, which was enough so the record company broke even, I guess. And it was like, well, might as well let them try again. Maybe they'll hit this next time. And we're pretty lucky that Epic stayed with us as long as they did. And I guess they're pretty lucky that they stayed with us as long as they did, too.
I've been around for you, been up and down for you, but I just can't get any relief. I've swallowed my pride for you, lived a life for you, but you still make me feel like a thief. You got me stealing your love away, 'cause you never give it. Peeling the years away, and we can't relive it. Oh, I make you laugh, and you make me cry. I believe it's time for me to fly. You said that you had no doubt that deep down we were really in love. Oh, but I'm tired of holding on to a feeling I know is gone. I do believe that I've had enough. I've had enough of the falseness of a worn-out relation. Enough of the jealousy and the it's time for me to fly.
Spring 1978 self-produced You Can Tune a Piano, But You Can't Tune a Fish, which seemed to contain all of the ingredients for success. But still, the big coastal media centers, including New York City, Boston, Philadelphia, L.A., and San Francisco, continued to ignore REO Speedwagon. Band members genuinely were perplexed, and not surprisingly, it led to second-guessing. Here's keyboard player Neil Dowdy.
I think it was the frustration that kept us going, because we knew we could do it. We weren't going to quit one record before the big one, and I think that's what kept us going all those years. We were just mad. We were getting madder and madder that we hadn't gotten the response yet that we wanted, and we just weren't going to quit until we did.
REO Speedwagon lead singer Kevin Cronin.
The sound of REO Speedwagon, you know, in the early days was pretty much guitar-based riff rock. There wasn't a lot of melody involved in it. And my tunes and my influence was more of a, you know, acoustic guitar, a little more emphasis on the lyrics and, you know, more of a folk music type thing. So on the Tuna Fish album, I thought we did a pretty good job of putting those two styles together, because the record didn't sell that great when it first came out, although it's done well in time. It's almost sold 2 million, just about the 2 million mark now, which is kind of interesting. A lot of people in the band kind of thought, well, you know, that's not really happening. Let's go back to more of the sound of, you know, when the band first started. And that was what the Nine Lives album was. It was a pretty, you know, we were way off the deep end. We got these crazy heavy metal looking clothes for the album cover. I mean, it was a pretty silly looking album jacket if you look back at it. You know, I wrote the songs for Nine Lives fairly quickly because I was kind of confused about what happened with the Tuna Fish record. It was like, God, these songs, I felt like I really wrote well for the Tuna Fish record, and still they weren't, you know, they didn't get accepted as well as, you know, as we kind of hoped they would. And unfortunately at the time, I was still kind of affected by that. I'd kind of looking at things in, you know, with the eyes or the ears of the people who were of the public, as opposed to just, you know, feeling it myself and knowing inside of myself, hey, these songs are happening. You know, I mean, I felt that, but still I was being affected by the lack of commercial success.
We'll be right back.
Great rockers sung by their new bass player then, Bruce Hall. That's REO Speedwagon from 1979's Nine Lives album. Next, REO's Kevin Cronin and Neil Dowdy reveal that the band gets an ultimatum. Get a big hit or go home. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of REO Speedwagon's number one album, High Infidelity.
I'm Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon.
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio for High Infidelity. This is Neil Dowdy of REO Speedwagon.
And I'm Redbeard on High Infidelity's anniversary. The dawn of the 1980s saw REO Speedwagon with a full 7 albums, all on the same record label, but without a breakthrough hit. REO lead singer Kevin Cronin says it was gut check time.
When the Nine Lives album was over and it was time to make another one, I remember it was like the word was, listen guys, this is pretty much it. I mean, you guys got to, you know, you either, you know, get a hit on this album or pretty much, you know, your Epic Records isn't going to be behind you anymore. That's how it came down to me. And I remember thinking, oh, all right, well, you know, it was just, actually it was probably a good thing they said that because it definitely got me back on my feet. Gary used to write tons of songs. Part of my job was to go to Gary's house before we went in the studio and like listen to all his demos and go look through his notebooks because you never could tell where a gem might be. And so I'd been over there for like 2 or 3 hours listening to all these songs and heard a couple that I thought were okay and this and that. Right before I was about to leave, Gary said, oh, I got this one slow song. It's called Don't Bring Me Down. I thought, Don't Bring Me Down. Wait a minute. I've heard that title before. But I said, well, hey, you know, part of my job was, like I said, to listen to everything and see if I could find anything. So Gary put this song on, and from the very opening, that opening line, heard it from a friend, heard it from a friend, just, you know, just got me. Reworked the chorus a little bit to get the title Taken on the Run in there, because it was called Don't Bring Me Down, like I say. I think it's, you know, Gary's best song ever. Of all the songs he's written, I think it was the most emotional he's ever gotten with his lyrics.
Heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from another. You've been messing around. They say you got a boyfriend. You're out late every weekend. They're talking about you and it's bringing me down. But I know the neighborhood and talk is cheap when the story is good and the tales grow taller on down the line. But I'm telling you, babe, that I don't think it's true, babe. And even if it is, keep this in mind. You take it on the run, baby, if that's the way you want it, baby. You say you're coming home, but you won't say when. But I can feel it coming. If you leave tonight, keep running. And you need never look back again. You take it on the run, baby. If that's the way you want it, baby.
We had been rehearsing over at SIR, Studio Instrument Rentals, in Hollywood for a couple of months, and we were, you know, writing a lot of songs. We had about, I don't know how many songs exactly we had, but we had plenty of songs. And all of a sudden, it was like, you know, as the producer, you're supposed to come up with these ideas, right? So it's like, you know, I felt like, I think we're pretty close. I think, you know, we got a lot of songs here. They're starting to sound good. Why don't we go in, just find a little studio, you know, kind of a cheap studio, and go in for a couple of days and record the songs as demos, and just, you know, just so I can take a listen to them, make sure the arrangements are right, see if there's anything else we want to change, and then go back into rehearsal again, straighten everything out, and then go into a real studio and make the record. So we went into this little place. Neil was talking about Crystal Recorders, which was a dive. I mean, this place was a dump. You could barely breathe in there from the smell of old vomit and, you know.
New vomit.
New vomit, right. But it was just a horrible place to work. But somehow we made the best of it, as we usually do. And we just came in, and in about, I think it took us about 3 days to cut all the tracks that would, you know, for the tunes that would be the High Infidelity album. It took us 3 days to cut the tracks and overdub. I mean, we put guitar solos and vocals and everything just to make the demo tapes. And then we were going to take a couple of weeks off to listen to these demos, everyone to listen to their parts and make sure they liked what they were playing, and, you know, for me to make sure the arrangements, you know, sounded good and everything. And I remember, you know, I had this demo tape and I started playing it in my car and stuff. And the more I played it, the more I became attached to the performances that were on this tape. You know, not necessarily only the arrangement, but those feedback guitar things that in Don't Let Him Go that Gary played, it was like, it sounded great. And some of the vocals I did, I thought, man, these are happening vocals. It pretty much set the tone for the record, because the song Don't Let Him Go, and it was basically, the song is about a guy who's doing a lot of things, you're having a good time, messing around, whatever, and the song is a plea to this woman who he really does love, just saying, hang in there with me, give him a chance to grow, is the second line. And that's pretty much what we were, I think that might have been the song that kept us off from sleeping on the couches, because it was, at least it was something saying, listen, hang in there with us, we'll be there eventually.
So you think you're mad, you got him for Mercedes-Benz. He's got a long way to go.
With REO Speedwagon's Gary Richrath just burning up that fretboard on guitar, that's the song that leads off REO Speedwagon's 1980 High Infidelity album called Don't Let Him Go. Still to come, the album explodes in popularity to become the number one album in America. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're with Kevin Cronin and Neil Dowdy of REO Speedwagon. In the studio, the 10 million seller High Infidelity.
I'm Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon.
Hi, welcome back to In the Studio for High Infidelity. This is Neil Dowdy of REO Speedwagon.
And I'm Redbeard for the anniversary of their number one album, which began inauspiciously as demos recorded at a hole-in-the-wall LA studio. REO lead singer Kevin Cronin marvels at the casual approach, which ended up providing much of what quickly became the biggest REO Speedwagon album ever.
Then the solo on Follow My Heart, Gary couldn't even remember what he played. In fact, he's never been able to play it since. things like that. Some of the things that the vocals that I did were total mistakes. I mean, total things where I forgot the arrangement and sang right through what was supposed to be a solo and did ad-libs through there, and it was like, that's not supposed to be there, but that's what came out naturally. And I remember just starting to think, man, this is the record. This is no demo. This is it.
I saw you at midnight in a dream that I had. From nowhere, you stood there, and you seemed so sad. And a vicious decision is driving me mad. Should I follow my head or follow my heart? You were different, indifferent, unbelievably cool. I approached you to show you that I'm nobody's a fool. An error brought terror as I sensed your dare. Should I follow my head or follow my heart? Should I follow my head or follow my heart? You've got the lead, baby, I've got to start. Should I follow my head? Should I follow my heart? Should I follow my head or my heart? We'll be right back.
The first single, which actually preceded the album's release, was called Keep On Lovin' You and was written by REO lead singer Kevin Cronin.
I had a little studio in my house, and I woke up sometime like, you know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, that happens to me a lot, where I'll be kind of laying in bed and a melody or some words will come into my head, and you just want to stay asleep, man. It's like, no, please, can't I get inspired like in the afternoon sometime, you know? Stumbled down into the studio and started playing this little thing in the piano, those opening chords. I mean, it's one of those things where the song just wrote itself. I don't really ever remember sitting there consciously working on the lyrics or working on the music. You know, actually, a lot of times for me, that's just how it happens. It just kind of blurts out so fast, and you know, you kind of wake up in the morning and go in the studio and you see these words in the notebook. And I always record everything on a little Walkman just so I don't forget it. It was just one of those things where the verses just came out. And actually, the chorus, I don't even know if you knew this, Neil, but when I came to rehearsal that day to play it for you guys, I didn't have a chorus yet. I just started playing the intro, and then just I thought, wow. You know, everyone started kind of listening, and I thought, boy, I better have a chorus for this tune. And I just kept playing, and the chorus was there. I mean, I'd never really sat down and wrote it. It just kind of came out that afternoon in rehearsal. So, you know, when you write that way, you have a pretty good, it's like you're, what you do is you eliminate any doubts. It's like, you know, you're not sitting there going, well, should I use this word or should I use that word? It's like, it just happens so quickly and so purely that you can feel real secure that it came from a, you know, from a real pure place.
Boy, I hate people that can do that. Takes me a year to write one lousy song.
You should have seen by the look in my eyes, baby, there was something missing. You should have known by the tone of my voice, maybe, but you didn't listen. You played dead, but you never played. Instead, you laid still in the grass, all coiled up in the sand. And though I know.
Sung by Kevin Cronin, Keep On Lovin' You not only became the elusive hit that REO Speedwagon had been trying to do for a decade, but it drove the album, High Infidelity, to the top of the U.S. sales chart by Christmas 1980. Writing in the All Music Guide, Stephen Thomas Erlewine says that REO's High Infidelity, quote, captured everything that was good about arena rock. That kind of reaction by the rock press was bewildering and bemusing to the members of REO, including Kevin Cronin and Neil Dowdy.
It's weird. I mean, it's like I know we did it, but it's one of those things where it was so out of the ordinary that it almost feels like it was a dream or something, you know, when you think back on it. It was definitely an outstanding experience. I mean, everywhere we played, places were sold out. We headlined Madison Square Garden and sold it out. What it was every dream that you have as a 12-year-old starting to take guitar lessons, it came true that year. You know, it was like number one this, number one that, you know, sold out Madison Square Garden. I mean, at one point we did a sold out show in the Houston Astrodome, and the following night a sold out show in the New Orleans Superdome. So we had two sets of equipment on the road. I mean, it was just, 1981 was definitely the year for REO Speedwagon, that's for sure.
It was strange to see people that had never been interested in you before suddenly take a real interest. They say when something like that happens, it isn't really you that changes, it's the people around you that change, and that was very obvious. That is very true. You're the same people, but all of a sudden there's a lot more people interested in you than there were before, and it's a little bit dehumanizing at first. You do feel like a product at first for the first time in your life. But we got through all that, and on the whole, it was definitely a very pleasurable experience. After 10 years of frustration, there was a whole year there when Rolling Stone magazine actually had to admit that we existed.
It was crazy. I mean, things, you know, we never knew what a security guard was for. We never needed a security guard before. But I remember, you know, staying in a hotel and there'd be like people literally trying to knock my door down just to, I don't know why, I guess just to shake my hand or I don't know what they wanted to
do. They were trying to get out.
She brings them to their knees, 'cause she does it like the rough guys.
From the 10 million plus seller and U.S. number one album, High Infidelity, that's REO Speedwagon. Our hearts go out to the band members, family, and friends of REO Speedwagon's original lead guitarist and songwriter for 20 years, Gary Richrath, who passed away in September 2015. May God welcome him home to a truly golden country in heaven. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guests, Kevin Cronin and Neil Dowdy. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and InTheStudio.net.